You're listening to the Bottom Line podcast, where those living with or beyond bowel cancer, as well as health professionals involved in bowel cancer treatment and care, share their inspirational stories and lived experiences with host and bowel cancer survivor, Stephanie.
There is something fabulous about joining with your tribe, connecting with those that you've shared lived experience and using your collective, authentic voice to make real and impactful change. It is emotional, it's exhausting, but it's deeply rewarding. On September 1st, 50 early onset bowel cancer patients and advocates from around Australia assembled again at Parliament House for Bowel Cancer Australia's third Call on Canberra event, appealing to policymakers and politicians to take action on early onset bowel cancer. Today I'm chatting with two fabulous Bowel Cancer Australia advocates to discuss their experience of Call on Canberra 2025, the action and impact they want to see from policymakers for early onset bowel cancer. Joining me today is Peter from Melbourne. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks so much, Steph.
And Jenny from Tasmania, Hobart, but at the moment in Launceston.
Yes, thanks, Steph.
Thank you for joining me today on the Bottom Line podcast to talk all things bowel cancer and Call on Canberra. What an amazing few days it was, wasn't it? It was quite emotional.
Yeah, it was such a wonderful experience to kind of, so grateful to be asked to attend. And it was just such a lovely experience. It was just such a room full of energy and stories and just people supporting people. It was really, really nice, yeah. And because post that, everyone's kind of contacted and haven't been first year. It's just a really nice, really beautiful community, yeah.
Have you come down from the high, Peter, and recovered? Because it is a high, but it's also quite a low. It can be quite emotional.
Yeah, it's definitely there's conflicting emotions, I think, because Jenny's nailed it in the sense that it's a lovely, lovely group of people, and you know, there's lots of laughter and it's fabulous to get together to raise awareness for a cause. But at the same time, there is an incredible amount of emotion that's there as well. People sort of reliving the experiences that perhaps they've moved on a little bit from, and also some people that are, you know, living through it right now and having active treatment. So it is hard, and I think it's a pretty special thing that you know we've been asked to do. It's I sort of consider it a pretty big privilege.
It's one of those things, and we'll talk about connecting with the tribe in a minute, because I think that's part of the beauty of it. It's the tribe that you perhaps don't ever want to be part of, but once you are part of it, it's the silver lining, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's blessing and a curse, shall we say.
Peter, obviously for you, this was your third time. So you have been to every Call on Canberra, and Jenny is a first time attendee or a newbie. And we'll come to her experience in a minute. But how did you find this year's Call on Canberra versus other years? And how do you think it's evolved?
I think personally, dealing with politicians is not something that I've ever experienced before. So I think in my first year, I was perhaps quite anxious about that. I was also anxious about the advocacy work because I didn't really know what to expect. But you know, we've touched on the fact that it's such a lovely, welcoming group of people. So you do feel immediately comfortable, I suppose, from that perspective. But for me, what I've sort of learned is I've already built some connections, I suppose, with some of the MPs that I've spoken to. So it's allowed me to become quite targeted in the way that I approach the meetings and I suppose present the asks that Bowel Cancer Australia is specifically asked for. So I think, you know, it has definitely evolved. It's evolved to a position now where I think, you know, in the most recent Call on Canberra, I was, you know, really able to be quite targeted in sort of positioning what Bowel Cancer Australia was, you know, I suppose, trying to focus on to see if we can make some change to these terrible statistics.
Yeah, that's right. And really good news in what came out of last Call on Canberra was they had, actually it wasn't last, I think it was the first one, we had the screening rates dropped, which was really great, the screening age. So we can really see that they are there. That's not entirely all of us, but we certainly are shaking the tree, which is nice. Jenny, for you, being a first-time attendee, Peter touched on how daunting it can be, and it is. Walking into Parliament House, it's a huge building. It is a daunting experience. How did you find it?
Yeah, I think I've always been one of those survivors who I'm a very positive person, but I have moments of reflection and it kind of hits you like a ton of bricks. So I was pretty anxious to go because I didn't know how triggering it was going to be for me. I've tried to keep life as normal as possible and kind of as where I can just kind of carry on working and just try and spread the word and support people in my the community who I connect with on a daily basis. So being a part of such a big thing, Canberra is so huge. I got lost so many times.
I still get
I guess
lost.
I'll go and look at artwork and have a little moment just to kind of like reset. And there was times I got lost, but the building itself is beautiful. It was such a pleasure to attend, and I think it was really refreshing to see how engaged the politicians were. I speak to people every day as part of my work, so I'm not overtly. I was probably more anxious speaking to the survivor team than the politicians, because as I say, because I've always kind of kept myself quite separate. In a professional world, I speak with varying people on a regular basis, so I just kind of went from it as the approach of like the politicians are humans too. And while they may not have had their lives touched by bowel cancer, they will have been touched by cancer or know of people or so. I tried to keep it quite human. Yeah, no, it was yeah. So for me, the biggest daunting was like kind of being that as part, as you've mentioned before, part of that tribe. But I was really surprised how engaged the politicians were and really quite touched how embraced we were on the day, being acknowledged in the house and that kind of thing. It was like so special. And it really, for me, cemented the reason and the cause why we are doing what we're doing and why to become an advocate for such a kind of unspoken kind of it, obviously it's one of the most tackled cancers at the moment. It's definitely on the increase for younger for early onset. So to see that it's getting acknowledged and it's people are becoming aware of it was just really refreshing.
I think for me, that's one of the most beautiful things that I've seen is that in the 12 years since I was diagnosed, bowel cancer is becoming more recognized and that awareness piece, which is so vital. But even over the 3 years at Call on Canberra, the red shirts walking around Canberra, we are now recognized, which is great. I want to go back just a step for both of you because you've both had bowel cancer, obviously, as advocates. I want you to just quickly give us a little snapshot of your story. I'll go to you first, Peter.
So I was 28 when I was diagnosed with bowel cancer, and I probably had active symptoms for 18 months. And I think, in hindsight, they got to a stage that were pretty bad. But, like so many of the cohort that was in Canberra and so many people who are touched by early onset bowel cancer, I got a lot of reassuring comments from doctors and GPs that, there's certainly nothing to worry about. And there's it'll definitely be something, like hemorrhoids or and that's I suppose what I wanted to hear. And I don't think it's necessarily because I was a younger person at the time that I was latching onto those things that I wanted to hear. I think anyone wants to not be scared by something, and you say, oh great, that I've been told this is fine, so let's play on back to the pub. So
Correct.
and then and when I was diagnosed, eventually there was a colonoscopy, found a tumor that was stage three. And I was really positive at first. And I was my wife and I were engaged, supposed to be getting married, so we had to defer our wedding because I was going to be having chemotherapy over that period. But I was still quite positive about it all. But what really, I suppose, I underestimated along the journey was just how many hits there would be. And I think from my initial surgery, had a couple of complications. I ended up having three surgeries, and just before the third one, I became septic, so I got quite sick in hospital. So there were sort of these multiple blows that sort of kept coming, and my first chemotherapy actually went really badly as well. I had a bit of a cardiac response. So I think once all of those had passed, and I got to that point of that first chemotherapy, I sort of started to be worn down a little bit, I suppose would be the way to put it. And there was this period of not knowing if I could continue with the treatment. And that really broke me, actually. So there was all the physical stress that sort of my body was put through, but then the emotional side sort of came with it, and my depression got quite bad. So one of the things, if I just quickly touch back and link it back to the power of this team or this connection of so many of us going to Canberra, is that you can obviously, we can demonstrate how many people this is touching, and how many families' lives are being hit by a freight train. But also, it does give a bit of a cross section of how different staging and how different diagnoses affect people differently. So, for instance, at stage three, my surgeries were quite invasive. I've got long-term side effects that I don't really care about because I'm still here. I'm happy.
But they still do affect you, Peter. And we talk about being in the rush hour of life with early onset.
Yeah, look, absolutely. They affect me. I remember once my oncologist asked me if I have any side effects, and I mentioned that I've got quite bad neuropathy in my hands and my feet, and he said, well, that's better than having cancer. And I was like, well, you asked. But but also you can see someone who's treated at stage one, and you can see the difference of, you know, the surgeries are potentially less complicated because they're less invasive, that the treatments don't have to be as brutal, and therefore the cost on the taxpayer is less. So, you know, there are so many knock-on impacts, and having this big group of people go to Parliament and go speak to MPs and engage about it and sort of bring attention to the fact that, you know, this is treatable if it's found early. This doesn't have to be the most deadly cancer. That's insane because it's treatable. But also if it's found early, its impact can be far lower.
I think that is a really important factor. We bang on about it quite often. You know, this is 99% treatable if it's caught early. And it is a disease that there is an early detection test for, unlike other cancers. You know, my mother died of ovarian cancer. There was no early detection test for that. Jenny, give us a little snapshot of your story.
So I was diagnosed at 39. I had had symptoms for probably about 5 to 6 years. And at the time, me and my husband were undergoing fertility treatment. So every time I commented about a particular symptom or is this normal or experienced this, a lot of it was brushed aside and kind of it displayed. It mirrors the same symptoms that it would do undergoing fertility treatment. It's probably the side effects of the fertility treatment. So this did go on for quite some time. And I think what Peter just said then, like, I think when you're going through such an emotional time anyway, and you don't know which way's up and which way's down. So you just believe the doctor and you kind of push it aside and go, I'm too young, it's fine. It's just, they know what they're talking about, it's fine. So symptoms progressed and my GP sent me for a colonoscopy, and that's where they found that I had a tumour in the colon, which we affectionately call Sue. So I named all of my tumours because I was actually stage four. So I had Sue in my colon and Larry, I had a spot on the liver, so a small lesion on the liver. So Sue and Larry were not welcome.
not welcome guests.
Not welcome and weren't asked to reside with me. So yeah, so I did have very, very radical intensive treatment, chemotherapy, radiation, and then multiple surgeries, and then a follow-on of six chemotherapies just as a precaution. The treatment for me was relatively, I say it's smooth, it's exhausting. Emotionally, mentally exhausting. If you haven't got that support network around you, I could imagine it to be very, very isolating. I think that support, I'm blessed with an incredible husband who listened to what I needed, which he will say I'm very stubborn, and I wanted to keep life as normal as we could until it wasn't normal. I think that was my way of coping with things. So I made him go to work, which he didn't want to leave me and that kind of stuff. I still worked as much as I could because I found the times that I took off, I did spiral into depression and the what ifs and just that catastrophizing and the fear of the unknown. So I found for me it was best to work part time through as much of the treatment that I could do. I did get neuropathy, which occasionally comes back. Look, thankfully, it's not all of the time.
Particularly in Canberra, right, Peter? And Jenny, it's damn freezing.
Cold. And I've moved to Tassie. Blimey.
it's perfect.
It's perfect for somebody living with neuropathy. I'm lucky in the fact that it doesn't rear its head too often. It's random. Random days, I'll be like, pick up a pint of milk and be like, what just happened? The long-term side effects of me are with the colon resectional, with living with Lars and kind of just navigating that once the ileostomy was reversed, navigating life with those side effects and kind of, again, I try to keep things normal, but this with Lars, there is no normal. And some things that work some days are fine. And some days that you're just trying to find the triggers, but sometimes the triggers don't trigger. And then sometimes things that are absolutely fine don't. So always being close to a bathroom. I do a lot of driving for work across Tassie. So I have got the toilet system mapped out from Hobart to Devonport if I need to stop urgently.
So I think what you both have really indicated here, and I think this is a really important factor, is you may have been classed as a survivor or in remission or NED, any number of terms, but you're still living beyond bowel cancer, but there are still massive side effects, which you're both still very, very young. Peter, I mean, you've got two young children, you've got a very busy job, Jenny. I think that is something that bowel cancer patients have these massive impacts on their life. And we talk about it. I love the word, the rush hour of life, because that's where you are.
It's a perfect explanation because life is still busy. And you do get to a point where treatment's over, you're technically NED, apart from the check-ins where you have scanxiety. For me, the biggest challenge was post-treatment. I think I felt very supported in that treatment space because there was always somebody to answer a question. But then when the treatment's done and you're on your way and you want your life to get back to normal and everybody says, oh, you're cured, you're good, you'd look at you go. And then you're still experiencing twinges and pains and whether you know it's normal, whether for me it was like, oh my gosh, is something coming back? Is it that fear while trying to get back into the rush hour of life? And still does every now and then. The scanxiety is real. The approach to the scans and the trauma, the trauma that goes with hospitals and just generally, I got admitted for something not unrelated and I was really, really quite upset. And the nurse was like, it's going to be fine. I was like, I know, it's me. It's just being put back into that environment again. It's just a little bit triggering for me. You know that life's going to carry. Life carries on.
So I suppose for both of you, in the context of Call on Canberra and what you've been talking about in your story, what are some of the key things that you want to see personally, not Bowel Cancer Australia, but you personally want to see your MPs and senators to action from your meetings? I'll throw to you, Peter.
Sure. I think, well, you know, long term, I continue to come back to the fact that this is a treatable cancer. And somehow a treatable cancer is the most deadly cancer for people aged 25 to 44. It just beggars belief to me. I just don't understand how that can be the case. So what we need to do is to continue to, I suppose, identify the reasons why, you know, why that is the case. Why is it the most deadly cancer? And of course, it would be fabulous to, you know, find the unicorn that tells us it's because we're eating this food and we're exposing ourselves to this and we're drinking that or we're taking too many antibiotics, whatever it is. But, you know, in the interim, people are dying now and there are definitely things that can be done that we are doing as a collective and that Bowel Cancer Australia is bringing a lot of attention to that I think are going to be fabulous initiatives that can help change these statistics. And I think, you know, if we can start to improve the 5-year survival rate for people aged 24 to 45, that would be absolutely incredible. So I think for me, that's, you know, through this journey, I have met many, many beautiful people through Call on Canberra and you know, we've lost people that attended Call on Canberra. That's just absolutely brutal. So, you know, for me, you know, if we can start making some progress, if we can start making, you know, that first line of defense for patients in with, you know, GPs not saying, oh, don't worry about it, you're too young to have cancer, because that's not right anymore. And maybe it was once upon a time, but it's not right anymore. So I think if we can make some progress in some of these areas that can help diagnoses be made earlier, you know, the impact will be, you know, really significant.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're great points. And for you, Jenny?
Similar. It's the awareness. It's the awareness that it's not an old person's disease anymore. It's awareness that the generation that it was the people who were there were all of a similar generation. So something's happening. Something has changed in the world around us. So, and like, as whether it's what we consume, how our lifestyle is, how our jobs are, just that greater awareness that it is happening and it's happening to people who are younger. And the survival rates are, yeah, really not the best. However, if detected early, it's a treatable disease, and people can move on with their lives and be a survivor, and their life can return to relatively normal or normal post if it's detected early. I think for me, the awareness for GPs and the medical teams in general, that's just not left as a last precaution. It should be part of if you've got symptoms, it should be considered straight up. It should be one of those things. There's identifying factors that I spoke to so many people about, like for women, iron deficiencies. Every one of us who had bowel cancer had an iron deficiency, except it was popped off to menstrual bleeding or diet. And that's a key factor, that it's those little things that GPs should go, hold on a minute, you've got X, Y, and Z. We need to look at this. And it may be something as simple as pooing in a pot. I think the GPs and general practitioners need to be aware of the symptoms that can present multiple factors. Obviously, a GP have their practice and how they diagnose, but I think this definitely needs to be popped on there.
I was just going to say, one of the things that, you know, we were talked to, I suppose, educated about when we were preparing for this call on Canberra was the fact that there are not age-appropriate guidelines for early-onset bowel cancer.
You know, yes, you're getting treated the same. A 39-year-old is not the same as an 80-year-old, or you at 28, Peter, was not the same as an 80-year-old.
That's just a no-brainer. We need age-appropriate guidelines. So little things like that, having age-appropriate guidelines will help change the stigma, will help change the mindset and shift it. So, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, we're asking for and we hope to see soon.
We talked before, and I think this is one of the most, this really fills my heart when I walk into the room over the 2 days with patients and advocates, the connection and emotion between advocates, and you've both touched on it. It always fills my bucket. I always go away from Call on Canberra highly emotionally charged, but in a very good way, in a positive way. Can you talk us through the impact that this has had on you and how powerful that collective voice is, having 50 patients singing from the same hymn book to policymakers?
That was the biggest takeaway for me. I've always been one of those people who haven't really tapped into group therapy sessions, or I've just kind of tried for my life to remain relatively whatever normal looks like now. And I haven't really engaged with people who are survivors, and for me it was so empowering, and it was emotional too, but it was so empowering to have so many strong people in the room who've beaten or are ongoing through treatment and have such an incredible outlook on life. And I think the collective outlook on life is, we just need to make the world a better place, and we just need to break the stigma of bowel cancer. All of my people in my social circle know all of my things. They know all of my bowel movements. They know everything. But it's nice to be in a room with people who are so open about their journeys, who share the good, the bad, the ugly, who ask about yours. And they're really genuine. I mean, I remember catching up with Peter out by the coffee station, and he was like, oh, I've not met you. And we had a good chat there. And it was just like people genuinely asking about your journey and really encouraging and celebrating the wins. And being able to identify with the challenges and identify the struggles that you go through and continue to go through. It was so, yeah, nice, beautiful friendships have definitely been made since being there. As I say, since being there, people have reached out, friends on socials, constantly chatting. And it was, yeah, it's been absolutely beautiful. It was emotionally charged. And I remember getting back to my car after my 2 flights back, and I just sat in the car and just sobbed. And it was partially grief of having to been through that, but just a gratefulness and just a reflection of what an incredible 2 days with Bowel Cancer Australia, with such education and such support and such want to have that change. But also the beautiful people that are in that space that have all been through what you've been through and embrace you fully exactly as you are. And it was so beautiful. Yeah, for me, that was, yeah. And it's something that I will now hold on to, and I will be there next year. And I'll bang that drum next year. Yeah.
Fantastic. And you won't be a newbie then.
No, I won't be a newbie. I'll be able to say, you can get lost with me. I just wander around Canberra.
And Peter, for you, obviously, you're an old hat at this.
So this idea of the stigma is an interesting one. But I think when you have, you know, a really big group of people all talking about, you know, what they faced, the experiences they had, it really helps to, I suppose, make the statistics emotional and make people want to listen to them. And, you know, I think what I hope will happen is you know, there was 50 people that have been asked to go to the Canberra this year to talk about, you know, their experience with early onset bowel cancer and, you know, the train wreck impact that it had on their particular lives. And And we've touched on the fact that it is just very emotional and it is very powerful to sort of share your lived experience. But sort of what I hope is that, you know, as more and more people become comfortable talking about these things, and more people sort of feel confident in the community talking about their lived experience as well, because I think it's not just having an impact in Canberra whenever that one day of the year is, it's talking about your lived experience so there is more awareness that this is a massive problem facing young Australians. And I think, you know, whether that be, you know, someone who's touched by early onset bowel cancer, you know, bumps into their local MP on the street to have a conversation with them about it, because they know who the red shirts are now, and they'll be like, oh my gosh, there's another person in my electorate who's been touched by this in the same way. So I think it goes far beyond Call on Canberra now. I think what I hope is that everyone who's sort of part of this category that we don't want to be part of, this team that we don't really want to be part of, sort of feels like they are part of this, and that we should all be looking and trying, if we're comfortable, to raise some awareness, because that awareness is what's going to help change the outcomes.
That community piece and that broader piece is so very, very important. And I do feel like the dial is shifting. It's shifting slower than I'd like it to be. I'm slightly impatient, but I do feel that we're going in the right direction. Before we come to my two key takeouts that are common with the Bottom Line podcast, any funny stories or anecdotes that came from Call on Canberra?
I think for me it was just getting lost. I was just such a big building. And it was like I was desperately wandering around this beautiful building, looking at art, and you kind of get lost in your thoughts. And the joy of being in such a beautiful building under such really awful circumstances that have brought you there. And then all of a sudden you snap out of it and you're kind of like, where am I? Which way do I go? And you're desperately looking, as you say, for those red t-shirts or somebody with something. Or you try and find, I'd always try and find myself back to that reception point and then walk back the steps down upstairs, like, which way do we go? And that was my, if I got my little compass.
I wish I had a tracker on, because I think I walked my 10,000 steps that
you
day.
You were here, there and everywhere. It was great to meet with somebody locally in my community as well. So for me, Matt Duggan is an incredible human, and post-diagnosis ran the length of Tasmania.
I know.
And when I realised I was with Matt, I was like, oh, I just survived. He survived and run a marathon every day for 12 days. So I did have a little bit of imposter syndrome, because I was like, I'm going to listen to my story about this dude running marathons every day. But we have stuck, and I will run with him next year.
Fantastic.
If he does it again. So it's a nice little focus for me. I won't be a marathon.
No, you just do a section.
Yeah, and it has to finish at the pub. So, yeah, our local. So that was, yeah, for me, that was really, really a nice space to be in.
And Peter, anything?
I don't know if there's any funny anecdotes. It's a very busy couple of days. I think for me, I don't think it's a funny anecdote, but one of the things that happened in my first call on Canberra was I was actually in a meeting with you, Steph, and I won't say who the MP was, but the MP had a past life as a GP, and we were sharing our stories with one of the professors who'd come to call on Canberra, and we talked about all the statistics, and the MP, who has since joined Parliamentary Friends of Bowel Cancer and has changed their views or been educated perhaps, said, after we told all of our stories and I had this long conversation, yeah, but it's still quite rare, isn't it? But so it was incredible. And we've seen change since then, because I've witnessed this particular MP and what they've done since. So, you know, we did actually manage to get through, but it just sort of shows, you know, can be a reasonably high hurdle in terms of getting the message across. But, you know, I think this time, look, it was lovely. It was lovely to catch up with old connections and friends, but there wasn't anything, I suppose, particular that happened to me.
Finally, I usually ask three things that you want listeners to take from the podcast, but today I'm going to ask you both two key points that you want policymakers to take from Call on Canberra. I'll throw you first, Jenny.
For me, it's definitely the greater awareness on early onset bowel cancer, especially for GPs and medical practitioners, how that happens in education, their education, their GP training, they've got a lot of training, I understand, but if it's in every element that is taken into consideration, it'll soon be part of their psyche to take it into consideration. And for me, more funding into research, I think, is a huge one. As we say, it's the most deadly cancer. The economic effects that it can have on people will have in the future are huge. So we need to know why. We need to know where this has come from, where this explosion of early onset bowel cancer, especially within our generation, has come from. So definitely more funded into that research space.
And Peter, she's probably taken your points.
He stole my thought. No, so I like complimenting that, Jenny, by saying we kind of want everything, in the sense that, you know, long term, absolutely, we want to you know why, so we can, you know, prevent is better than cure, right? But I think in the short term, you know, when I found out that there wasn't age appropriate guidelines, I nearly fell off my chair, right? So how is it not age appropriate guidelines? So let's get some age appropriate guidelines. Like, I think that isn't like an absolute no brainer to take away and to aim for. And I think, you know, the other one, you know, Bowel Cancer Australia, with a couple of the advocates last year, has developed some CPD modules, which are fantastic CPD modules for general practitioners. And, you know, personally, I'd love to see if they can be made mandatory. You know, I don't know if that's a thing, but if that could be made mandatory, you know, I really think that that will start to help the awareness that this is, that for some reason things are changing, and, you know, this is now a, you know, a realistic outcome that the patient may be presenting themselves with. So I think for me, yeah, age appropriate guidelines would be the major one, and I'd also love those CPD modules to be made sort of compulsory.
Fantastic. I agree with all of those points. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us firstly at Call on Canberra. It's so lovely to have had you there and you to be part of that collective voice. It was a wonderful few days. Thank you for your passion for raising awareness of this disease amongst policymakers, but the broader community, and for sharing your story so authentically. It's so wonderful to have people who are happy to share their lived experience. So thank you for joining me today, Jenny and Peter, on the Bottom Line podcast.
Thanks so much, Steph. Privilege.
Thanks, Steph.
Thank you so much for listening to the Bottom Line podcast. To find out more about bowel cancer, or for support, or simply to donate, please go to bowelcanceraustralia.org.